Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
The 2015 session of the General Assembly convenes on January 14th without Tom Tillis as Speaker of the State House. Leading the chamber this year will be Representative Tim Moore, a Republican from Cleveland County who has spent the last 4 years as the Rules Committee Chairman. Moore, who will be joined by longtime Senate Leader Phil Berger, promises to run the legislature like a business, doing more with less. Tillis, for his part, is now a U.S. Senator who believes America can become great again by shrinking the role of the federal government, starting with the influence of the U.S. Department of Education.
They're forcing tests, they're forcing reports, they're taking freedom out of the classroom, they're preventing teachers from being able to innovate. We need to pay our teachers top salaries, and we're working on that. We've done more in this session than's been done in years. We need to add to that, but we also need to get the federal government out of the way and stop having them force decisions on these teachers. They know how to educate our children. I know these teachers. They're great people. They want to do that for our kids. We should let them do it.
With Tillis's departure, Governor Pat McCrory loses a close ally in the legislature. And as Rand Coble with the North Carolina Center for Public Policy Research acknowledges, this comes at a time when Republicans are divided over the best approach for economic development and the use of state tax credits.
Let's take the film credits as a first example. Historically, the state has had a tax credit for film productions where you got 25% of the money that you spent making the film or the TV series up to $20 million. Last year, that totaled about $62 million, I think, in terms of money paid out to film companies or TV series. And North Carolina's become a haven for that. I mean, the Hunger Games movie was made here, Iron Man 3, the TV series Under the Dome. So it's been at least successful in terms of films or TV series being made here. A lot of people, though, felt like, okay, these are temporary jobs, and for the ones that are in North Carolina, they're relatively low-paying jobs. Why is North Carolina paying, you know, Tom Cruise or whatever movie star, Robert Downey Jr., to make a movie and then leave? And so you've got to split in the Republican Party in terms of whether this is a good use of public money. What they've done in the budget is change it from a tax credit to a grant program, and it's much less money. Instead of $62 million, it's going to be $10 million, and the film companies will have to apply for a grant. So a split in terms of what's the role of government in luring films or TV series, if any.
Lawmakers and Governor McCrory will also be grappling with Medicaid expansion and reform during the long session. Rose Hoban with North Carolina Health News explains the House, the Senate, and the governor's office all have competing ideas.
Last year when Governor McCrory came in, he came in proclaiming that Medicaid was broken and that it needed to be updated. And so initially, it really looked like the McCrory administration was looking toward moving to privatization, that is, opening up North Carolina's Medicaid program to managed care companies that are for-profit. Some are not-for-profit, but for the most part, they're for-profit. And they would come in and they would manage everything and really take out a lot of the DHHS functions and manage the program. They faced a revolt from doctors and hospitals around the state when they made that initial proposal. So to their credit, the administration went back to the drawing board. And over the course of several months of work and a Medicaid reform advisory group, they came up with a plan that would be led by the state's providers and would have the state's providers form what are called accountable care organizations. And these ACOs, which kind of have been emerging over the past few years, share more risk with the providers, more financial risk with the providers, and they give them, you know, benchmarks to meet. And if they meet the benchmarks, then they can gain extra money for doing their care. And if they miss the benchmarks, they lose money. And so it seemed like that had a lot of support, except for in the Senate. When that plan came out, Senator Lewis Pate, who was a member of the Medicaid Advisory Group, wrote a letter saying that the plan did not meet the goals the Senate wanted, which I think primary among them were budget predictability. I make little quote marks in the air around that. And that's where it bogged down. It was really in the Senate that this plan met its demise, or you know, at least it met a significant roadblock. And the House continued to support it. The governor supported it. DHHS supported it. The providers support it. The providers made some concessions. the Senate still wouldn't support it. So it looks like the Senate side of the legislature is really pushing for that initial, you know, managed care company model to happen, whereas pretty much everyone else is looking to have it be more provider focused. So that's where we're stuck right now.
Another unknown about this upcoming session is, will lawmakers become sidetracked by an ideological agenda? Senate President Pro Tem Phil Berger has already pledged to introduce legislation this session that would let magistrates refuse to perform same-sex marriages that violate their religious beliefs. Chris Brook with the ACLU of North Carolina calls this latest legal challenge incomprehensible.
Every argument has been put forward in federal and state courts throughout the nation. None of them have succeeded. It is clear what the law is here in North Carolina. The Supreme Court has spoken. The Fourth Circuit has spoken. It's very plain what the law here is in North Carolina. Every argument that was going to be made, that could be made here in North Carolina, has already been made in Virginia and has already been made in many other venues, has not proven persuasive. So I don't understand what arguments they're going to bring forward at this point that would in any way serve to distinguish our ban from Virginia's. I just think it's an unfortunate last-minute intervention. We'll have to see how that plays out, but I don't think it's certainly not going to change the long-term trajectory of what, you know, Amendment 1 is fated to end up in the dustbin of history.
And of course, as the session unfolds, Governor McCrory will be watching how the decisions of the House and Senate impact his approval rating. Tom Jensen with Public Policy Polling says this session is all about walking a fine line as the governor prepares to run for re-election in 2016.
What we found ever since the famous legislative session of the summer of 2013 is that Governor McCrory's had a negative approval rating now for almost a year and a half. It's not hugely negative. It usually comes in at about the -5 range, something like that. But what really sort of brought him down was his unwillingness to stand up to the legislature when it was passing all that legislation that voters really saw as extreme. And that's going to be a very interesting power dynamic between McCrory and the legislature in 2015. He's seen that when the legislature gets out of control, it has a negative impact on his political stock as well. And it'll be interesting to see if the legislature actually cares about that or if they just say, we're going to do whatever we want. And we really don't care what impact it has on you, Governor McCrory. But one thing we found in our polling is that voters think the legislature, rather than Governor McCrory, is calling the shots in Raleigh. And if that perception continues to hold and the legislature continues to be unpopular, that makes McCrory look weak. And that was a big part of what derailed Governor Perdue, was her looking weak. McCrory needs to try to avoid the same fate.
We never saw him use the veto this past session. Is that something that would help strengthen him in the eyes of the voters?
Using the veto, I think, would help strengthen him in the eyes of the voters if his veto actually survived. If he vetoes something and then the legislature just turns around and says, we don't care what you think, we're passing it anyway, that just makes him look even weaker than he did already. So it's definitely going to be a fascinating thing to watch in North Carolina politics in 2015.
That's it for another edition of News and Views. Look for us on the web at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Chris Fitzsimon. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon, Director of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com. News and Views, a weekly look at state and policy issues, is a production of the North Carolina Justice Center.